WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are out on the road. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery. You can let yourself play. We've been playing. I had two shows last week. We're doing a Wednesday this week. We're going to be at Coco's this week in Lauraville with our mayor, Brandon Scott, also with Senator Cory McCray, who I've yet to meet, but I've had on the show several times, so that'll be great. And then, of course, my lifer friend, Mike Bersigliano, who lives right around the corner, right by Tyndale and Berkshire and places I grew up as a kid. I grew up right down the street every weekend over there playing in the playground in Herring Park. We're going to be with Marcella and our friends at Coco's. I haven't had a crab cake there in a long, long time. Next week on Friday, we will be in Abingdon, Harford County, at Conrad's. I've had Conrad's crabs, but never Conrad's crab cake. So that's going to be great. That's next Friday on Black Friday. We'll be there from 2 until 5. And then from noon until 3 on December 3rd, back up in the North County in Cockeysville at Pappas by popular demand. And by the demand of Leonard Raskin and Raskin Global, we'll be having a Pappas crab cake on the 3rd. And then the 30th anniversary begins at the Beaumont in Catonsville on the 9th. The Ravens schedule commences yet again this week in Chicago after a long week. It was anything but blissful after the loss to the Dolphins. Luke Jones joins us now. All of our Ravens coverage brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. They sell winning lottery tickets, too. Dude, I got to go double layer here. You know, I feel like Matt Judon wearing the red sleeves now. And it's winter time. I'm trying to get warm. I'm trying to get cozy. As you know, I spent some of my formative years at the turn of the century nationally syndicated in Chicago, freezing my ass off. I'm headed to Chicago this weekend, I think, if I can cart a bag. Whew. Ravens got some baggage. They're taking to Chicago this week. They only go every 8 years. The weather's always awful. There's either a monsoon or a tornado. I know you were there 8 years ago for some crazy things. And some thoughts about this weekend. This was probably a very, very busy weekend in the castle in regard to John Harbaugh and coaches and what they're going to do, because I don't think Thursday night sat well out there.
How could it? I mean, you come out of the bye week, you beat Minnesota, you're in a position where you feel like you can get to, you know, get into that 8-2 kind of territory, and, you know, I mean, really get yourself ready for the final stretch, where we've talked about the AFC North games and we've talked about them playing the Packers and the Rams and in late December and early January. You look at the Miami game, you thought, that's a win to bank, right? I mean, it's the Dolphins. They've been horrible this year. And I mean, even with the Dolphins coming off of the win against Houston, they had turned the ball over and it was really sloppy and not overly impressive. Well, you lose on Thursday night and you start looking at the rest of your schedule and you look at where you are as a football team and you're trying to figure things out. It's not terribly different from where they were a couple weeks ago, being on their bye week, coming off of the blowout loss to the Bengals, where I don't think you're panicking, but I think you are looking at, and you made the point in the aftermath, the immediate aftermath of the Dolphins game, of how Lamar Jackson and, you know, some other wins here and there have deodorized what their very clear issues have been over the course of the season. Well, you've now lost two of your last three. You've lost them in very unimpressive fashion. It wasn't heartbreaking losses to elite teams or anything like that. So you're kind of looking at this thing and you're saying, what do we need to do to get the offensive line playing better, get to a point where you can handle the blitz? Because, you know, I'm saying, we got to blitz the Ravens. And the dirty little secret is the Ravens have been blitzed a lot.
Luke, you broke up on us there for a second. We'll repeat that again. The dirty secret is?
The dirty little secret is what the Dolphins did on Thursday night. Other teams are going to try to do that to them in terms of blitzing and blitzing and blitzing some more. And I think when you look at some of the analytics sites, and I know looking at Pro Football Reference over the weekend, Lamar Jackson's already been blitzed a ton compared to the past. And I don't think it's about him. I don't think it's him having these out of the ordinary struggles. It's his offensive line and trying to hold up long enough for Lamar to make you pay, because theoretically, with his ability, both as a runner and as a thrower, you should absolutely be able to destroy teams and make them pay for blitzing you. And to be clear, the Ravens have done that at times this year. You know, we talked about that with, you know, the Denver game, for example, and teams that have been aggressive, and the Ravens have been very good at making them pay. But you know, there's always that recency bias, right? There's always, you know, you're only as good as your last game. And when that happens, yeah, I think that was an unsettling development for the Ravens, not just because they lost a game to someone that was perceived to be not a very success with you in that way. Certainly the rest of the AFC North saw what Miami did on Thursday night. So, you know, I mean, it really is a case of trying to get better. And a lot of the elements from the bye week where you, maybe the coaches didn't take the entire weekend to self-scout per se, but I do think you have to look at the process of everything they do. We've talked about it. This offense hasn't started fast all year other than a couple games. You know, we've talked about the offensive line. You know, I mean, you just go down the list, big plays on defense. These are things that should be theoretically getting better, and they're not. And that's what's incredibly frustrating, you know, on both sides of the ball, you know, with their deficiencies. I mean, we see this team for stretches play really, really well on both sides of the ball, but, you know, they continue to start slow, and that puts your, you know, that just gets you off track, and you don't have rhythm, you don't have any tempo. You know, beyond talking about the offensive line, I'd love to see this team use a little more tempo, use a little more no huddle from time to time. I mean, even late in the game, when they're trailing in the fourth quarter by two scores, they were still huddling up. I mean, what are you doing? I mean, it's very odd in that way. And I know a Greg Roman offense historically doesn't move quickly, but we've seen Lamar Jackson operate from a 2-minute offense at various times over the last couple of years. And it's not as though they haven't had success doing it. So I'd like to see more tempo. I think that's something that could put some defenses that are fancying this idea now of blitzing and blitzing and blitzing some more, put them on their heels a little bit doing that. But you know, they've got to figure this out because it's not going to get any easier schedule-wise.
Well, Luke, that's a down and distance issue too. I mean, to me, that when you have success against this offense on first down, it really puts them in a position where when you start to blitz, they have to pass. They don't have much of a running game. They don't have much of a pass blocking game either. And to your point, and we brought this up earlier, and I know we were talking about around the league, they've been outplayed in 6 of their 9 games, right? We would say that. Statistically, on paper, these crazy double-digit comebacks and 66-yard field goals and all of that, they've been a sub-team in that way, plus 14 points over the balance of 9 games, which, you know, makes them plus a point and a half, right, or whatever it is through the schedule in a fortunate result at 6-3. They're fortunate. I don't know what else to say. When you have 66-yard field goals go doink, you're a fortunate football team. I mean, if that's the thread between 5-4 and 6-3, and it is, right? I mean, I just, on their best day, we spent so much time in the offseason talking about they're going to bring in Houston, and they're going to have a rush, and they're going to replace Judon, and we didn't want to spend money on him anyway, just like we didn't want to spend money on Za'Darius Smith before that, and we know how Kruger worked out, and those other pass rusher guys. And then all of a sudden, you need somebody to rush the passer, and you need something on the defensive line that doesn't feel like a bunch of 30-somethings. And that's the part that scares me the most. And I love Calais Campbell. I've always loved Brandon Williams more than he loves me and his music selection and all of that. But I've watched this a long time. And when you have 30-somethings who are the glue to holding together a young Dwayne Starks, a young Ray Lewis, a young Chris McAllister, that's one thing. When you have 30-somethings like Matt Burke on the offensive line and Bryant McKinney holding up the Torrey Smiths and the Joe Flaccos and the Ray Rices in their prime and Dennis Pitt is in their prime, that's one thing. It's a different thing when you're asking the 30-year-old guys to be more than the meat and potatoes when I don't know where Patrick Queen is. I see more of Josh Bynes in 3 weeks than I've seen of Patrick Queen in 9, right? And these 30-year-old guys logging big minutes, big plays, the less the offense has success, the more the defense is on the field. That's an obviously stupid statement, but it's one thing that made their defense smell a lot better 2 years ago was that Lamar's out there doing 8 and 9 minute drives and 14 play drives and run left, run right, first and 10, second and 1. I remember that. And it went on all year long and our eyes We marveled at it. And now you have to go do this a different way late in the year, in division, bad weather, slogging around. Somebody commented the other day that Pittsburgh looked like a looked like they'd had a 4-H festival there. You know, looked like the horses took a crap out in the middle of the field. And that's what Justin Tucker's going to be kicking from. That's just where we're going to be the rest of the year. And none of these wins are going to be creativity wins. They're going to be 21-17, 28-24. They're not going to go blowing teams out because I don't think they're capable of that. And they were very capable of that 2 years ago. I just think they're in for a different slog, and I'm concerned about them. And I'm not concerned that they're going to be a playoff team. I just don't think they're going to look like an elite team at the end of this season because I think the competition's too stiff, and I don't think they're an elite team. I think they're a team struggling to get by and getting by on bubblegum and paperclips. And a lot of weeks, that's good when you can kick a 66-yard field goal. And I hope they can keep that up. But they're on borrowed time right now, and I think especially for the 30-somethings, I'm concerned about how integral they are.
I think that's fair, and we'd be remiss if we didn't acknowledge the guys that they've lost already. And we've talked about that from the moment that the J.K. Dobbinses and the Gus Edwards and the Marcus Peters and the L.J. Forts go down, we talked about it and say, okay, yes, you're not packing your bags and saying, okay, the season's over. You know, you're not resigned to the idea that you're done. But we talked about the challenge of that in not just what that means for their upside at that point in time, but also acknowledging just because you have a bunch of injuries in late August and early September doesn't mean you're going to go through the rest of the season without having more injuries. So as much as, and you mentioned it, I think it's the interesting juxtaposition of some of the fortune they've had within games, which they certainly have. On the flip side, they've had really bad injury luck, right? So, but at
that
the same
started time, early. I mean, they haven't had a carry in their backfield that has been anything like what they wanted. No. You know, when you start putting Anthony Averett out there for 72 plays instead of Marcus Peter for 72 plays, you're just going to get a different result. And especially when you start stacking it up from week 5 to week 9 to week 13 to week 17, that, you know, you're going to play 800 plays without Marcus Peters, your football team's going to look different.
Well, and I mean, Marcus Peters specifically, and then I'll get into some other guys on the defense that you were just mentioning, which I think is a great point when you're talking about some of these 32 and up guys that they're really leaning very heavily on. But I think with Marcus Peters specifically, and you mentioned Patrick Queen, who, by the way, has played well since they've moved him to the Will spot. But the problem is, that's not what you draft a guy in the first round to do, right? I mean, you can, if Patrick Queen had been a third round pick doing what he's doing now, then great. You sign off on it and say good. But he was drafted to be an every down linebacker, and right now he's not that. And that's out of necessity. And Josh Bynes has done a nice job. But you mentioned Marcus Peters, and then you go back to what happened on Thursday night. Patrick Queen forces the fumble, you know, he gets the strip sack. And if you look at the replay, I'm guessing he does not outmuscle Liam Eichenberg, the Dolphins tackle for that, who was in really good position to just fall on that right away. But his failed attempt to scoop and score, which in the big picture, they were going to need something crazy like that to win that football game, most likely. But that really did magnify the fact that the Ravens are tied for 30th in the league at 7 takeaways. And that's where Marcus Peters comes in. That's where, when you don't have Marcus Peters on the outside, you need Marlon Humphrey to be on the outside way more rather than him kind of moving around. And keep in mind, the last couple of years, he played the nickel because Tavon Young wasn't out there. So that was out of necessity. But you do wonder, you know, we talk so much about the fruit punch, right? Marlon Humphrey's ability to force fumbles. Well, he was playing in the slot a lot. He was playing inside. He was closer to the action. And that's not to say he hasn't had some opportunities to do those things this year. And he's missed tackles in the process of probably trying that on a few occasions, but you miss those plays.
Well, your dad and my dad would tell you never tackle the ball, tackle the player, right? Like, and that's just not the way they're trained. And
well, and analytically,
and it really smells bad when you miss a tackle.
No question. But those turnovers do matter, though. You want to get turnovers, and that's really what we're seeing right now. The Ravens, with all the big plays they've given up this year, and I think I looked at it Sunday night, and they've given up 40 completions of 20 or more yards, which I think is tied for 31st in the league. You know, they've given up 9 completions of 40 plus yards, which is, right at the bottom as well. I think they're 30th in with their 40 completions of 20 or more yards. Anyway,
explosives, as Coach Billick would say.
You could tolerate that a little bit more. I'm not saying you tolerate it, but you could tolerate that a little bit more if what? If your defense would make some big plays, right? Force some turnovers in the process, get some probability, win probability changers going in the other direction for you. But they're not doing that. They're not dynamic and they're not forcing turnovers and they're giving up bad big plays. It's a bad combination. No matter how good you might be,
it's like giving up walks and home runs.
It really is. No, you're absolutely right. It's funny. I was even thinking about that over the weekend.
By the way, I got baseball guys on this week. Eric Fisher's coming on this week. RN's coming on. I got baseball people. Mari Brown's coming on, although we'll probably wind up talking about Rush. But I was going to say this week.
I was going to say you're going to be talking about an impending lockout, but that's aside the point. We'll talk about that some other
time. That's what there is to talk about. When I go to Chicago, it's a baseball town, man.
I got you.
Literally, so this week I thought of baseball, so I'm going to do some baseball. So when I start talking about walks and home runs, at least tip a cap that I used to watch baseball, man.
Right, no question. But it's funny you mentioned that because I was even thinking about that over the weekend, that the Ravens defense right now reminds me of that pitcher who's still striking people out, and he'll go through stretches where he pitches very well, but he can't stop giving up the long ball at the worst time, right? And that's what the Ravens defense is right now. But like I said, you could live with a little bit of that if you were forcing some turnovers and creating some takeaways, and they're just not doing that. So you get a defense that, while they certainly were not the main reason why they lost on Sunday, because again, they gave up 22 points and one of Miami's touchdowns came on a fumble recovery, a return for a touchdown. So you can't put that on the defense, but we did talk about the two colossal busted coverage at the end of each half that led directly to 10 points right there. So, well, that's basically the difference in the game right there. So it's just very frustrating in that way. But again, bringing it back to what we were talking about though, with the injuries, and you mentioned Calais Campbell, you mentioned Josh Bynes, They're relying on these guys that are older and they're playing. Justin Houston, that throw in there, he played very well on Thursday night, but they're all 32 or older. And I see the snap count that they're needing to rely on with Calais Campbell, for example, who has played very well this year. People will look and say, oh, he only has a half sack. He can't be that. He's been excellent. If you watch the games, Calais Campbell's been a monster up front, especially stopping the run. Hasn't gotten sacks, but he's still pressured the pocket. He's the only interior rusher they've had who's done that. But when he's playing 45, 50 plus snaps every single week, which, especially here of late, Brandon Williams has been sidelined. Who knows what's happening with Derek Wolfe? I mean, he was designated for return during the bye week and he practiced 2 days during the bye week, hasn't practiced since then. So, they're going to put him on the 53-man roster, but who knows when he's going to play. You're really asking a lot of Calais Campbell and you're asking a lot of Justin Houston and you're asking a lot of Josh Bynes, who I understand hasn't been a every down starter his whole career. So maybe he has fresher legs at age 32, but he's still 32. And to your point, as you get deeper into November, December, and January, you need a few more of those young guys to emerge. That's why I was encouraged to see Odafe Owe, for example, have a good night on Thursday night after he had kind of been quiet the last few weeks. So that was good to see. But yeah, they're relying on some older guys. They're still missing people when you're talking about Wolf. Nick Boyle, they held him out another week. We'll see if this is the week. But we'll see about Tavon Young, who had the foot issue, who left the game on Thursday night. We'll get some more clarity here, hopefully over the next few days going into the Chicago game. But those injuries, those season-ending injuries, you deal with that all year, and then you're kind of holding on, at certain spots right now. And if they can withstand, and avoid having a couple more season-ending injuries, then great. I think, then you feel better about their chances in January. But, it's rough to see. And, we mentioned Deshaun Elliott, the recent loss of him. And, the injuries don't explain everything that's going on with this team. I think that's far too simplistic. I mean, when you're talking about not having good tempo. That has nothing to do with injuries, right? On offense. I mean, offensive line, you should be able to play with a little more tempo and play no huddle from time
but
to time.
But I would say this about the offense, and this is where I was going to segue. Luke's here, by the way, Baltimore Luke. You can find him. All that brought to you by Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. I'm wearing my Chicken Palooza shirt here and getting ready to go to Chicago this weekend. The running game, and in all of its glory and what it's supposed to be and how it's supposed to set up the passing game, and they want to pass the ball better. Just the offensive line and the running backs, and I go back to the beginning of all of this, which is when Ronnie Stanley got hurt last year, I said they can't win the Super Bowl without him. I'm starting to wonder whether they can win a division, how they're going to slog along through these games next month with subpar offensive line play. I'll say that across the board. And then a running game that we're halfway through the season, and their best play is still Lamar fades back, Lamar takes off, Lamar maybe finds a hole, Lamar get down, Lamar get out of bounds, Lamar don't take too much contact, let's get back in the huddle and do it again. Do it 15 more times. I just, they're on borrowed time with this kid running the linebackers. I'll continue to say that, and there'll come a point where you'll get hurt, and I'll have to be I told you so, you shouldn't run into linebackers, but they don't have a legitimate running back at all, And I'm out at Knicks Grandstand the other day with Tommy Chigoris, and I had Leonard Raskin and Mike Rosenfeld, my buddies. It was like normal, Luke. Like, we were eating crack. We were like out normally. I didn't realize that Rosenfeld and I hadn't been in a room together for 2 years. We Zoomed together once or twice. He's like, it's the first time we've been in a room together in 2 years. And I'm like, but I sit next to you at Ravens games, but not often. So it's weird. So we get together and we're talking about the running game. One of them's pissed at Freeman. One of them's pissed at Bell. Well, you know, one of them's, where's Tyson Williams? You can't have Lamar running the linebacker. Lamar can't be your running game. Lamar can be a decoy to your running game. Great decoy. When he takes off 7, 8, 9 times a game, get real yardage, make him pay. But the risk reward of him running into the line of scrimmage on these draw plays, I hold my nose to that, and I just do, and I'll continue to hold my nose to that as he gets older, more injured, the line gets worse, the running game gets worse. How's the running game going to get better the next 8 weeks? I keep asking myself that, and it ain't Lamar's going to get better, or they're going to run Lamar more, because John Harbaugh's press conferences be damned. That was a poor strategy to beat the Minnesota Vikings. They better not have to win that way every week.
That wasn't their strategy, though. He scrambled. Over half of those were scrambles, man. I mean, you know, we can keep having the same. Lamar's not the decoy in the running game. Lamar's the center of the running game. Now, I agree with you. You don't want him running 20 times a game, and he's not, and he hasn't been. You know, he's been rushing. The Minnesota game aside, he's been right around where he was last year. And that's an addition to him.
But when he runs like that, it's because everything else has failed, right? The pass blocking's not there. Guys aren't getting open, all of that.
But you also realize he's their best player, and he's their best rusher. And that was true last year. J.K. Dobbins wasn't as good as Lamar Jackson. That was true two years ago with Mark Ingram. Mark Ingram wasn't as good as Lamar Jackson.
They don't have anything like that right now, though. They don't have that other thing. Yeah.
Correct. And that's because they lost J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. So what do you want them to do? Just lose games? I mean, this is what they are right now. I agree with you. There are certain elements, like, I cringe every time I see Lamar Jackson lower his shoulder right on the sideline rather than run out of bounds. I totally agree with you on certain elements like that. That said, Nestor, they have the greatest rushing quarterback in NFL history. If you're not going to have him run, then what are you even doing? Like, seriously, like that's like having a toy that you're just going to keep in the box on your shelf rather than play with it. If you're a kid. So I hear you, and I'm not saying I disagree with you 100%, but Lamar Jackson's the greatest rushing quarterback in NFL history. It's already bearing out, and people will say, well, you know, he's got to play. No, he's already.
Yeah, it's not like Cam Newton running in and getting touchdowns. He's had 41 of, you know, whatever that number was the other day. Right. I'm like,
and look, as far as your long-term concerns, that's fair. I'm not going to say that I don't have certain, but I would also say, look how much better he's become as a passer this year compared to last year, compared to what he was, you know, as a rookie. He's already showing growth in that way. And that's ultimately in the long term, from a long-term standpoint, yeah.
That'll be great when they get real running backs around him and a real line around him. But then sure, you're going to give him $40 million a year and then say, well, let's draft some young guys.
Well, but that's how it works with any team that pays their quarterback, and they're going to pay him, and they should pay him, and they'd be crazy not to pay him at this point. He's a special talent, and they won a hell of a lot of football games over the last 3 years with him as the quarterback. Things got better instantly from the time he took over for Joe Flacco, and you know I'm a Joe Flacco guy and was for a long time. But
threw a touchdown pass on Sunday. I don't know if you caught that.
I did see that. Good for him. I'm always rooting for Joe. But what they have is special. But at the same time, they're in a position right now where, yeah, their running game, which, by the way, statistically is still right up there at the top. But it's just if you watch on a week-to-week basis and you see what it looks like, it's just – it doesn't have that efficiency. It's more – it's way more disjointed. It's way more – predicated on Lamar or going up against a lousy run defense like, you know, the Chargers, who the Ravens did run all over because they can't stop the run. But you're right from the standpoint of you'd rather not have to put so much on his plate. But going back to what John Harbaugh said in reply to your question after the Minnesota game, it's where they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, to win the game. I hear
right,
all of that.
Right. So, and look, sure, there are concerns, but I'd also say this. There are also major concerns when your quarterback's dropping back 50 times throwing from the pocket. Let's be very clear about that. And we've talked about that. So it, for me, it's really the issue is more than anything. It's not him running a certain number of times or him throwing a certain number. You want to be able to distribute and share the workload a little bit more than where they are right now. But when Devontae Freeman is the best you have right now that's healthy, and I think Freeman's been okay. I don't think Bell's done much of anything. You know, people were excited about how he looked against the Vikings, but he's been a complete non-factor other than that. Freeman's had his moments, and I think if Freeman were your number two and you had either Dobbins or Gus Edwards right now, I think you'd be perfectly fine with Devontae Freeman as your second guy. And maybe if Latavius Murray comes back and the ankle's healthy, maybe they'll have something there that's a little more palatable in terms of not having to put so much on Lamar. But
everybody likes Tyson Williams except the coaches.
Well, it's yeah, and that was something that I thought we'd see more of him coming out of the bye week, and it's been the opposite. We've seen, you know, he didn't.
See, this is one of the things when we don't talk to anybody. I don't know what the rub is, but I've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
There's something that they don't like about him, and they won't put him on the field. And you know, whether it's blocking, whether it's behind the scenes, whether it's handling the ball, whether it's knowing the plays, I don't know, but they don't want him on the field. Obviously, we're halfway through the season, and they're going through Le'Veon Bell running in quicksand and not putting him on the field.
Yeah, and look, I mean, there. If you really look at it, there has been plenty that he's put on tape where he's missed cutback lanes, for example. I mean, we saw him have a couple early fumbles. Remember the Kansas City game? That game gets out of hand if Devin Duvernay's not there to catch the fumble, you know, right at the goal line there after they were already down 7-0 at that point. And who knows if Lamar can bring him back if they're even further behind the Chiefs at that point. So there was that. We saw, you know, in the Bengals game, he's on the field late and Lamar Jackson's trying to change a play and he had no idea what was going on. We saw him run out of bounds on a fourth down instead of try to cut up field and actually try to get the first down. So there have been those signs. However, in being in agreement with you, he has more juice in those legs than these older. I mean, these are gray beard running backs by NFL standards. These are guys in their late 20s. You know, as much as Adrian Peterson might be the anomaly in that way, or Frank Gore, you know, until this year, running into their mid 30s, you just don't see that. These are old running backs that they're relying on right now. But it's clear they don't have any trust in Tyson Williams. And I mean, I think there's some validity to it, but to your point, without knowing the whole story there, you know, maybe he's not a hard worker behind the scenes. I have no idea. I'm not suggesting that that's the problem. We don't know. But it is frustrating that, you know, for example, you see Cleveland, you know, despite their awful performance overall, you know, they've lost Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and D'Ernest Johnson's done a nice job for them. That's where you'd say, well, man, you'd really like, you would have loved to have had a back, you know, just kind of sitting there waiting to do a decent job for you that they just haven't had, you know.
Well, there was a conjecture about a Colts deal too, and that never happened.
Right. And some of this is also, you know, when it really comes down to it, I mean, they lost their top two running backs. You can debate whether Justice Hill was their third best or their fourth best, but you know, we're talking about a guy that was on the practice squad last year in Tyson Williams. It just speaks to how much they've lost in the backfield when we're debating whether he should get more carries or, you know,
Devontae Freeman. We've also seen the results of these other guys and realizing they're not quality running backs in the league anymore.
And this also comes back to the offensive line. Devontae Freeman, and we've talked about this a lot with Latavius Murray. If you block for 7 yards, they're going to get 7 yards. You know, they're not completely inept, but they're not going to do anything that makes up for any deficiency you might have, whether, you know, someone misses their pull block or, you know, someone just completely isn't in the right spot, or Bradley Bozeman has a snap that's a little bit off target and it disrupts the timing. And, you know, I mean, you look at all that, they don't have any running backs that are going to overcome those types of things. So that's where, again, it comes back to, yeah, Lamar Jackson is their best running back. And I don't say that to be disparaging, suggesting Lamar is a running back. He's a quarterback who's also an awesome running back. But to your point, and it's fair, and there's much validity there in expressing that concern. But at the end of the day, short of punting on the season, it's where they are right now. And it's where what you need to do to try to win football games. And I mean, on Thursday night, I mean, let's face it, no one really had, Lamar even only had 39 yards on 9 carries. So it's not as though they had anyone running the ball effectively against the constant blitzing of the Dolphins. But yeah, it's where they are. They're trying to chase it. We've seen this offense overall. And let's keep in mind, even with Thursday's disaster, acknowledging that, they still rank very favorably statistically offensively, and they've still scored plenty of points. It's just, you'd like to get off to better starts, right? You'd like to be able to run the ball more consistently and not have it be Lamar Jackson doing most of the heavy lifting there. You'd like to be in a position where you don't have to come back from 2 scores down in the third quarter, which is a position they're finding themselves in so frequently. You'd like to be able to do those things, but because of injuries and because of, their style of play, if we're talking about tempo, for example, they haven't been able to do it. And, going back to what you mentioned about the defense, it hasn't allowed them to be as complimentary, right? When your offense can't stay on the field, and what, they had 9 straight drives where they did absolutely nothing after, Tucker's missed field goal on Thursday night, your defense held on for a really long time, but eventually, you're going to bust a couple plays, and we can talk about that. And not saying there's an excuse to have busted coverages, even if you miss Marcus Peters or even if you miss Deshaun Elliott, but it's not that well-oiled, finely tuned machine that they had certainly 2 years ago. Last year wasn't quite as orchestrated, wasn't orchestrated quite as well, but certainly they went on a run after their COVID outbreak, and maybe that's what you point to more than anything. That team at Thanksgiving last year with guys testing positive for COVID, and you're taking the JV out to Heinz Field, and we saw what happened after that fact. Now, difference is that schedule was much more favorable than what they're looking at right now after Sunday's game in Chicago. So, not saying that there isn't a run in them, and I'll continue to say I expect this team to win the division because I'm not a believer in Cleveland, I'm not a believer in Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati.
I'm not a believer in any of those teams, but I'm also not a believer that the Ravens are going to go 5-0 the rest of the way against them.
Oh, yeah. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying at this point, because the Ravens are 6-3, because they have banked an extra win compared to talking about these other teams, or 2 extra wins compared to these other teams, that's where I still give them the advantage. And they are a little more tested at this point. So, but at the same time, it's going to be a grind, and I'm with you. Maybe there's one game where they wake up on the right side of the bed and the other team does not. And, they have another Chargers performance in them, but for the most part, that hasn't been them this year. I mean, they've played close games. They've been behind. They've given up big plays on defense. They haven't created many big plays on defense in terms of turnovers.
They're vulnerable every week. And when you lose to Miami, they're another team. They're a 9-8 team trying to get to 11-6, right? Yeah. I mean, that's really what they are.
And the difference is now they aren't because they have number 8, but you can't expect Lamar to put on the magician hat every single week. And, you know, Thursday was a great example of that. They needed another miracle comeback. There was no miracle comeback to come. And that, it's not a knock on Jackson. You know, you can't expect any quarterback to do that every single week, but it does speak to just how much they are really relying on him, really across the board, because the defense gives up the big plays. Even special teams.
That's my concern, that it is a team sport and they have the best player and blah, blah, blah. And he's running in the linebackers and he's going to get in the phone booth every week in the third quarter. And that's not a long-term prescription, and we have to see some changes. Luke's going to be out in Owings Mills. It's all brought to you by Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. I want to give a shout-out to my friend Bill Cole, because my Royal Farms coffee's in the Cole Roofing mug here today. Billy's going to be joining us. I talked a little bit about my Colgate Elementary school experience. Man, you're Mr. School Teacher. At some point, I got to talk. I'm going to bring you over and tour you on the east side, take you over to Pizza John's. But my new elementary school, I talked to Don Moeller about that on the recon as well. Some great stuff. I'm going to have the principal on, the music teacher on, from my old elementary school. We're going to talk some education at some point around here as well. But we are out on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It is all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Letting ourselves play, I should say. I'll be playing the Cocos. I might get two crab cakes on Wednesday. We do not have a crab cake tour on Friday. Originally, I was supposed to be going to Chicago on Friday. Now I'm going on Saturday if I go at all. Trying to get there this week. But either way, Wednesday we'll be with our mayor at Cocos. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Corey McCray will be joining us. Mike Rossigliano will be joining us. And some friends from Coppin as well. That's on Wednesday. Next Friday, Black Friday, day after Thanksgiving, leftovers and crab cakes. We'll be at Conrad's Crabs. Looking forward to some crab cakes up in Abingdon. We're going to be in Harford County with some guests on Black Friday. And then back in Baltimore County in Cockeysville on December 3rd at Pappas. So check it all out. Come on out to the Beaumont on December 9th and celebrate 30 years on the radio. That'll happen on December the 13th, but we're going to celebrate on December the 9th. We got some great guest book for that as well. Luke's in Owings Mills. I am here at WNST AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.